You all. That song really, excuse me, that song really blessed me. I find myself recently, many times when I pray, I find myself thanking God for the rock and the anchor and the fortress that He is. And that really is always a blessing to me. You are an observant man, thank you.
My wife was.
This morning, we will be reading from John chapter 16 and referring back to a couple of verses in chapter 15. But follow with me as I read from John chapter 16, verses 1 through 15. As we read, you can be thinking about, I've entitled this message, Plaintiff or Defendant? Chapter 16, verse 1, I have said all these things to you to keep you from falling away. They will put you out of the synagogues. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God. And they will do these things because they have not known the Father nor me. But I have said these things to you that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told them to you. Sure, if this mic is on or not. I did not say these things to you from the beginning because I was with you, but now I am going to him who sent me, and none of you asks me, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. Thank you, Spencer. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away, for if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you, and when he comes, I will convict the world concerning sin and righteousness and judgment. Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. Concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father, and you will see me no longer. Concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth, for he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak. And he will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me, for he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. Therefore I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All right. In this passage, Jesus is speaking to his disciples, his apostles, and he said, he begins in verse 1 by saying, these things I have said to you. What are these things that he said to you? Well, in chapter 15, if we'll remember, the first part of the chapter, he's talking about this relationship between, he used the analogy of the vine and the branches, and about talking about this relationship between Jesus and his disciples, his followers, saying that, you know, basically if you, in short, that if you abide in him, if you are in the vine, then, and you will be purged so that you will bear more fruit, you will be pruned so that you bear more fruit, and if you don't bear fruit, you will be cut off and end up in the fire and burned away. And then, so he talks about that relationship, and then in the latter part of describing that relationship, he says, he says that he doesn't call them servants anymore, but he calls them friends because he's made everything known to them that the Father has made known to him. And then, yeah, so let's get back to chapter 16 at this point. He goes on and he tells them that in verse 2 that they will be put out of the synagogues. In other words, they will face opposition. And this greater overall text from the latter part of chapter 15 through this first part of chapter 16, well, actually probably through, into the toward the end of chapter 16, he's talking about opposition that Jesus' disciples will experience from the world, from the enemy. And so he's saying to them that he's telling them these things so that they will not fall away. And he says, the time will come when you're going to experience opposition. You're going to be put out of the synagogue, talking to his disciples now in their Jewish culture, that they would be put out of the synagogue, and furthermore, that these people who are doing this are going to be thinking that they are doing God a service. And we only have to look at the example of the Apostle Paul, who thought he was doing God a service in going all over and persecuting Christians, bringing them to the appropriate authorities and having them tried, trying to put them into prison and so on, watching the being a clothes keeper for those who were beating Stephen and so on. Now, he goes on in verse 3 and he says that they will do these things because they don't know the Father nor him. And he goes on and says, I have said these things to you that when their hour comes, then you will remember what I told you. It's oftentimes that way I find it in the Christian life. You know, I read a passage, God gives me a thought or whatever. I'm praying and I think about something, and then later on when something happens relevant to it, then I remember. And I think that's a common occurrence for those of us who walk in the Spirit. Now, the latter part of verse 4, we are introduced to the Holy Spirit. He says, I did not say these things to you from the beginning because I was with you. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself there. But in verse 5 then, he says, but now I'm going to him who sent me. And he says, none of you ask me where am I going. But then in verse 7, nevertheless, I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage that I go away, for if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. Notice he's talking now about the Holy Spirit. He is introducing the Holy Spirit in these first couple of verses from the latter part of verse 4 on. He's introducing the Holy Spirit. And then here in verse 7, he refers to him as the Helper. Now, later in verse 12 or verse 13, he's referred to as the Spirit of Truth. In the latter part of chapter 15, verse 26, he's referred to as the Helper. Now, why is he in what context here is he the Helper, or why is he referred to as the Helper? I want to repeat what I heard from a guy by the name of Abraham Hamilton III. I listen to him fairly regularly. He's on AFR Family Radio, American Family Radio, Christian Broadcasting. But anyway, in one of his podcasts, I heard him yesterday as I was working out and about, I heard him say, he said, facts are just that. They're just facts. And he didn't say this, but as I was reflecting, he said, but he said, truth is a person. And I was like, I never heard that before. But I thought about that. You know, there's a lot of truth to that, and I'll get more into that. But facts are inanimate. They stand, but by themselves, they're just inanimate. They're facts. They may be true, but they're inanimate until they're represented by someone. So, in verses, the heart of this passage today will be in verses 8 through 11. And this may not be very long, but I have a very specific point that I would like to draw our attention to. And that is this. In verse 8, he says, talking about the Helper, the Holy Spirit, and when he comes, he will convict the world of sin and righteousness and judgment. Now, when I was growing up, and I would be come to a place in my life when I would be deeply aware of my guilt, my sinfulness. I remember very, very clearly my father referring to or talking about it as so and so or I am under conviction. I'm under conviction. I think we use that word in a little bit, not quite the accurate sense of the word. When someone is convicted, the word convict here just simply means to prove or to convince. Sometimes in the sense of rebuke, but to convict is simply, you know, when somebody is found guilty of a crime, he's convicted. It just means that it's been proven, it's been documented, that it will be documented, and that it's been proven he's been found to have committed the crime. Well, when I was said to be under conviction, it was probably more accurately true to say that I was convicted of my sinfulness. I experienced that weight, and I realized that I was sinful. Now, here in this passage, it says that when the Helper comes, he will convict the world of sin and righteousness and judgment. This is a passage that I've struggled to understand for many, many years, and I'm not sure I have it all right now, but I think I have a little bit more clarity than I have had. Understanding that facts are just facts and truth is a person. Let's go through these following three verses from verse 9 to 11. Verse 9 says, concerning sin, because they do not believe me, Jesus is saying. And verse 10, concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father, and you will see me no longer. Verse 11, concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. Now, down in verse 13, he says, when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth, for he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. And then, wrapping up this section in verse 14 and 15, he says, he will glorify me, for he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine, therefore I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you. So, working this passage backwards a little bit. So verse 14 and 15, I would concur that what he's saying is that that Jesus, basically God is giving Jesus ministry, his wisdom, his power, his strength, his energy, his life to us with the help of the Holy Spirit to bring about this conviction that he's talking about.
Now, if we go back to chapter 15, in verse 22, Jesus said this. After he had talked about this relationship that the disciples, that the followers of Jesus have with the vine and the branches and so on, that analogy, after he talked about that relationship, had called them friends because he said, because I've made known everything to you that the Father's made known to me. And then he tells them how that there will be this conflict with the world. And in verse 22, he says this, if I had not come and spoken to them, they would not have been guilty of sin. But now they have no excuse for their sin. In verse 24, he says, if I had not done the works that no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen and hated both me and my Father. If we think about the ministry of Jesus, what do we think of? What did he do? What was the ministry of Jesus? What did he do? What do we think of that he did? What comes to my mind is, well, he taught the multitudes. In other words, what he was doing was he was teaching the multitudes the ways of God. When it came to the religious leaders, the authorities of his day, he challenged them by telling them the truth, by telling them the facts about the kingdom of heaven, and so on. He challenged them. And he, when opportunity availed itself, he did acts of kindness, of compassion, of generosity, of care, of love. And so it was, in summary, I would posit that it was his acts of compassion and love. It was teaching the multitudes the truth, the facts of the gospel, of the kingdom of heaven, and it was challenging the authorities with the same. That's being very brief, but in summary, I think that would entail a lot of Jesus' ministry right there. So, going back to chapter 16 and verse 9, when 9, 10, and 11, where he says, concerning sin let me read verse 8 again. And when he comes, the Holy Spirit, he will convict the world concerning sin and righteousness and judgment. Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. Concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father and you will see me no longer. Concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. So let's work that backwards again. If truth is a person and facts are just facts, what are they being convicted of? What is the conviction here? Basically saying that the Holy Spirit will convict or will prove that there is sin, that there is righteousness, and that there is judgment. So let's start with judgment. And there are I don't know exactly where to turn to right now, but it says in the scriptures earlier, in the book of John, that the ruler of this world is judged already. He has already been judged. So the conviction, in other words, the facts are there's the facts, and then there's the person that needs to take those facts and bring them to a court or a judge and say that these are the facts. I'm looking for a verdict. And just the facts left to themselves do not condemn or pardon anyone. But when a person takes those facts and brings them to a court or a judge, then they become, real. Then they become something more than inanimate. And so when Jesus, so back at the garden, when Adam and Eve chose to eat of that fruit, they chose to listen to the temptation that the ruler of this world offered them. They became a part of his domain. They became a part of his kingdom. So sin, the ruler of sin, sin was here on this earth. There was the kingdom of darkness, the kingdom of light. And when Adam and Eve, they succumbed to that temptation, they made a decision, and they became a part of the kingdom of darkness. Jesus came, and he came for the purpose of dying, making atonement for that sin. And he says, okay, so Jesus represents, he is the testimony, he is the one that is represented in verse 9, where he says, concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. In other words, okay, so there is sin, and the ruler of this world, he's already been judged, and that judgment, by virtue of the fact that he has been judged, is what causes our guilt. I would posit to you that when we feel the conviction of our sinfulness, it is by virtue of the fact that we, as being a part of his kingdom, being a part of his kingdom, are experiencing the same guilt that he is experiencing. Now, when I say these things, I realize that there may be some theological implications. So if I'm wrong in this, I welcome to be challenged. But I think looking at it this way helps to make sense of this passage to me. Because Jesus is posited as representing in verse 9 there, where he says, concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. In other words, there is sin, and Jesus came to atone for that sin, and we, by believing in him, by choosing to place our faith and trust in him, can be delivered from that sin. But if we refuse that, then he stands as the witness that we rejected the antidote to our sinfulness. And then in verse 10, where he says that concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father and you will see me no longer. How does that... God, I would posit that God is the plaintiff, the one representing righteousness, in that God, Jesus came, and he was entirely obedient, and he served the mission and purpose for which God had sent him, and therefore he has gone back to the Father and abides and resides at his side, and that serves as a testimony or a witness to what is righteous. Now, in putting all of this together, when he talks in verse 14 and 15 about committing all of his work, revealing and sharing all of his, go back to chapter 15 where he calls us friends because he's made everything known to us that he's made known to the Son. And then in verse 14 and 15 where he has given everything to us, the ministry and everything, Putting all of that together then is, it comes down to this, that the facts of the gospel are just that. They're facts. But God and the Holy Spirit is given to us, referred to as a helper. So the implication is that we are to take the facts, the message of the gospel, along with the Spirit's help, and present them as a plaintiff would in a court of law. We are to present them to the world around us. And as we think about that, the more faithful that the Church of Jesus Christ has been in doing that, the more of a mark and an influence it would leave on the culture around us. The more that we take the word, take the facts, take the gospel, take the truth to the world around us, the greater and the broader the influence of that will be. But when the church has been ineffective, when the church has been silent, when the church has enjoyed being called a friend, when the church has enjoyed having the security and the comforts of being right with God, but we have not been faithful in being a plaintiff, what has ended up happening is, and I'm not talking about political parties, or let's just say the godly on the one side and the ungodly on the other side. The believers in God and the God deniers. Because the church, the believers in God, have not been active as plaintiffs, we, I believe, will see the time when we will be the defendants. In other words, and you see it happening. The enemy has been emboldened, the God deniers have been emboldened to bring the battle to us and say, you're discriminating. You're not being inclusive. Yet all these accusations, that's what makes it so infuriating to us. That's why it's so infuriating when we get charged and challenged with all these accusations that come out of that originate in a lie and a falsehood. But really, we will find ourselves either being a defendant or a plaintiff. And it's because we've not been the plaintiff in general. The Church of Jesus Christ has not been enough of the plaintiff, bringing the facts, the truths, and being a great enough influence that we now will find ourselves being the defendants. And even at that, we can choose, are we going to stand and defend, or are we going to switch sides? I don't know. I hope I've been able to bring some clarity to maybe some of the dynamics that we're feeling, experiencing. I felt like this passage was a good way to communicate some of those things. I think that was this kind of at the core of what we're going through as a nation right now, as a people. And I think it's looking at this passage, it really helped me to see the role. You know, the Holy Spirit first called a helper, the Spirit of truth, but and then in referring to the truth, he's referred to as a person. The Spirit of truth, it's a person. And so yeah, we look to the Holy Spirit for all kinds of help in our lives. But really, in this passage here, I believe that he's given to us as a helper in us as being a plaintiff or maybe a defendant. In speaking the facts, the message of the gospel, the truth that Jesus came, that there man is fallen, that Jesus came to provide the answer for that fallenness. Men have rejected him. Yes, there is righteousness. We know that by virtue of the fact that God has called Jesus back to be with him, where we all hope to be one day. But the fact that of that is reality is a testimony. It's a conviction of the fact that there is a righteousness. It is possible to please God. And so it's kind of broad and it's kind of complex and it's kind of maybe loose-ended, and I hope I was able to communicate this idea, but God bless you.